Hello and welcome to The Bulletin with UBS on Monocle Radio. Each week, the sharpest minds and the freshest thinkers in finance take you beyond the numbers and hype right to the heart of the big issues of the day. This week, we mark International Women's Day, this past Friday, by taking a deeper dive into the theme of women and investing, courtesy of a report from the Chief Investment Office of UBS Global Wealth Management that explores how women can best ensure they're positioned to realise their lifetime investment goals. In a world where gender gaps persist, women have the opportunity to at least partially offset these with a sound approach to investing. In addition, as women tend to live longer than men, their wealth planning needs to cater for a greater lifespan. It's therefore important to increase awareness around the impact of savings and pension gaps and consider how best to invest to achieve lifetime objectives. To unpack these themes and the report for us, we're lucky to be joined once again on the programme by Mariana Mamu, Head of Advice Beyond Investing in the CIO of UBS. Mariana, it's great to talk to you once again. Now, perhaps done before, around the time of year of International Women's Day, of course, it's a particularly expedient moment to train our lens on women and investing, look at how better to realise lifetime goals for women investors. Maybe just on that broad point, first of all, tell me a bit about taking a moment, say on International Women's Day, to really make sure that the focus is trained on this area that's something of enduring fascination to you. In a way, I guess it's a shame that it requires these singular moments to focus on something that should be front of mind all year round. But it's a good opportunity, I guess, right? To make sure we're asking the really trenchant questions in this space.
Yes, definitely. The International Women's Day, we can take the opportunity to increase awareness around the importance of financial empowerment and how it is important for women to take control of their finances in order to meet their objectives. But of course, our efforts don't stop around International Women's Day, and we make efforts as part of our UBS value proposition. But it is important to take advantage of the fact that there is a lot of media focus and interest around this day.
Absolutely. Well, look, let's jump into the report, Achieving Lifetime Goals, as I just mentioned. And it breaks things down in a really intuitive and helpful way. I guess let me ask you about the sort of first part of the piece, Mariana, first of all, which is about wealth accumulation. And this is something we've discussed before. Concerns around, I guess, what goals at retirement, pension gaps. I know we've spoken before about the sort of divergence of earnings growth by gender, particularly around childbearing years, which is such a seemingly hard to address topic. Tell us a little bit, first of all, about the wealth accumulation, some of the key issues in this space.
Yes. So as you mentioned, retirement is an important topic for women, of course, and for everybody, but it is of greater concern for women. And that is quite justifiable if we look at the numbers, given the pension gaps that exist. So on average, women receive 26% less income than men from the pension system, but also they have less retirement savings, so they expect to receive less and have less money to sustain themselves. Now, why is this the case? I mean, it is identifying the drivers of the pension gap is complex, but there is a direct link between earning less and therefore making smaller contributions to any pension pot. And as you mentioned, we see from research a very notable discrepancy in pay around and after childbearing years. McKinsey has highlighted that women in general find it hard to get their first promotion from an entry-level position to manager, and this missed promotion holds women back for the remainder of their careers. Now, also, women typically devote much more time to childcare and housework. And we see that this is even the case for women that earn more than their partners. So potentially surprisingly, they also adhere to this traditional gender stereotype role, and they end up doing much more housework. So this unequal allocation of unpaid work constrains their career choices, the income, and the professional advancement. And very often we see that women feel overstretched and they end up taking part-time work, which leads to career stagnation and smaller pension contributions. So we also see that this stunt career progression affects the average peak earnings between men and women. So some studies show that women reach the peak career earnings in their early to mid 40s compared to mid 50s for men. So clearly there is different wealth accumulation journey.
Some quotes that really jumped out are from the Nobel Prize winning economics laureate, Professor Claudia Golden, who was talking particularly about how these so-called greedy jobs exacerbate exactly what you've just described there, Marionette, but that there is some, well, if not light at the end of the tunnel, there are some positives, and that increasing flexibility, which obviously has been driven in, you know, post-pandemic as well, that additional flexibility is helping to, if you like, make those so-called greedy jobs a bit less greedy. Are we seeing that?
Yes, totally. This is a positive note, that flexibility, both in terms of location, but also working hours. So what time you can log in and finish your work has helped many women to stay in their roles. And 1 in 5 women say that flexibility has helped them stay in their organization or avoid reducing hours, which, as we said before, has a big impact in career progression.
So, Marianne, that will obviously help to address this gender gap, but is it enough? Because some of the data is still quite stark, isn't it? And it feels like there's more to be done. What does faster and more effective progress, what could or should that look like, do you think?
I think, obviously, if we look at the impact of part-time employment and the impact that it creates in career stagnation or earning less and over a lifetime, then clearly there is something that can be said about helping women transition back and working more full hours. And we see that probably that's also related to policies in different countries regarding support with childcare so that you can increase the labor force participation, how much time you have away as maternity and also paternity leave. So we see some differences by some research that was done by Cleven and other researchers, where they looked at different countries, and we see the lasting gender pay difference effect and penalty. In some countries like Denmark and Scandinavian countries, we see it at 20%. And then in other countries like Austria and Germany, it's around 50 to 60% impact. And that has to do a bit with differences in terms of labor force participation, hours of work, wage rates that differ. So I think there are some learnings or takeaways on how to help women post having children in order to reduce their unequal allocation of unpaid work. But it's also very cultural.
Well, yeah, we'll talk a bit more about investing to address some of these goals in a second. But one last thought from the first part. There's some quite striking data about early retirement and women's greater longevity than men, some of which I hadn't considered. Also, how much more finance women may need to set aside in a lifetime to cover medical bills, particularly in later life when they do live longer. And I guess what's interesting about that as well, not just the statistics on their own in and of themselves, but the fact that it really underscores this point that you continue to make so eloquently about the need for some really robust and comprehensive financial planning to address those different demands.
Yes, certainly. So as you mentioned, first of all, it's important to consider that women could face a higher probability of retiring early and more unexpectedly than men. And that is both because they, for health, potential health reasons, but also because they may choose to retire early as an older spouse retires. We see that also menopause, which is a period where many women consider or are forced to either reduce employment or take time off. And after that, coming back to work may prove challenging, and it may also force them into an early retirement. So we see that maybe 3 out of 5 women may retire sooner with little preparation, which is clearly challenging. In addition, as you mentioned, women on average live longer than men, around 5 years globally. But also interesting is that the years that they live longer, they have poorer health. So they have higher rates of chronic conditions, such as arthritis, depression, osteoporosis. And this means not only you have to save or have more wealth to keep you sustained for longer, but you will also have higher medical bills to pay during those final years. So as you already said, it is really important to have a solid financial plan that ensures that you can meet all of these with high probability.
Let's look at the second part of the piece and some of these ideas around investing in a bid to meet those goals, to narrow some of the gaps that you've described, Marianette. It's really interesting. Again, we've talked before about investor confidence and the investment performance. of decisions made by female investors. And it's that funny picture again, where actually women tend to typically make better decisions. There's greater pragmatism, even though many women, I think a majority in fact, don't believe that they will outperform the male cohort, which seems kind of ridiculous to me. But just, yeah, sketch that position for us and tell us why actually, if we maybe communicate some of these facts better, it might help to address the challenge to a degree.
Yes, it's quite startling, the statistic by a survey by Fidelity that showed that only 9% of women believe they can outperform the investments of their male counterparts. And that's quite astonishing and very telling around women's financial confidence. And as you mentioned, this is contradicted by research that shows that once women do invest, they tend to perform better than men. They trade less often, so they incur less costs. They are less likely to sell at market lows. They check their portfolios less often, which also could explain why they have less probability of selling at market lows. They are more, in general, they're more disciplined and they follow investment plan and they are less likely to change their risk profile amid volatility. So in a way, you can say they're less emotional and they are less likely to time the market. And overall, they have a better performance.
So how do we go about communicating that more broadly? Because presumably by the act of communicating those, as you say, quite arresting facts, that in and of itself would make the picture look a lot brighter. I guess it's partly just making sure we're having these conversations, looking at that, what the data tells us, and trying to make sure we reach as many of these investors as possible, or potential investors even, and make sure that they are furnished with this important data.
Yes, I think, especially as you mentioned earlier, ahead of the International Women's Day, it is an opportunity to highlight and bust a bit this pre-existing myths that women are not good investors that they might have, so that confidence is built. And we can see that also financial confidence is very closely associated with risk tolerance, which in turn depends on risk perception. So experience and familiarity with the topic is important, exactly because it affects your risk perception. And men tend to be more exposed to conversations about investing even from a young age. And we need to change that if we want women to gain more experience and therefore more confidence.
It's probably an expedient point to mention, almost as an aside, some of the principles about constructing robust wealth plans. Marianne, and these are things and values actually that run throughout UBS's global wealth management approach. Things like the three L's, this UBS wealth way, which again, I think we've discussed before, but it's always sensible to come back to it, because looking at those three L's, those different strategies, that does speak to how best to ensure balanced portfolios that can deliver on these really important goals.
Yes, we look at ensuring that there is a plan and identifying the goals that you are investing towards, so that then you have strategies that are optimized for these goals and then they help you meet these goals. We also know that actually for women, their risk tolerance increases once they know how a certain investment helps them meet a specific objective. So having a purpose-driven investment framework is important in that context. And having a carefully drafted, personalized wealth plan enables you to also run some simulations and scenarios. What if you retire later? How many years more you need to plan? What if your expenses increase? And that way your investment, the designed investment portfolio, is more robust and it's the right one for you as an individual.
I just wanted to pick up on one thing you mentioned, which was about women's confidence in their investment decisions. One thing that jumped out was that confidence increases when the investments are positively impact society broadly, which I think is interesting. Perhaps that's intuitive. But at the end of the report, it kind of goes on from there to talk about the potential for all of that additional capital flow and how much of it could go into sustainable, impactful investing if we back up the talk on that matter with action. That was, again, very stark. And that would be a huge win for everybody, for people, planet, and all across the board.
Yes, exactly. This is an additional element of why it is important to focus on the topic of gender financial empowerment and for women, not only to help them meet their own goals, but because it would have a positive impact for society and for our GDP. So this is also an important message to communicate in context of increasing efforts and momentum.
Just a final thought, perhaps, Mariana. I always find it interesting to issue a bit of a call to action, a challenge maybe in certain light, to our listeners. If this conversation strikes a chord with people, what's the first thing to do? I mean, I think when we spoke before, you talked about the necessity, the importance of just having the conversation, whether that's with friends, family, whatever the setup is, and just making sure that these discussions are... they're not things that are kind of kicked into the long grass. I mean, is that a good starting point? I guess what people should do is get in touch with you and your colleagues and start really unpacking the thing. But I guess just making sure this is in the discourse is perhaps the most important step.
Starting having, as you mentioned, the conversation, start having an overview of your own financial situation, but also what is it that you're trying to achieve and what will be needed. And eventually, depending on, your investable assets and your situation, finding a trusted advisor, someone that you will be able to ask all of the questions with no feeling bad about asking questions, clarifying jargon, slowly getting used to trying to start your investments. So I think overall, it's important that the topic becomes less of a taboo and that more women talk about it with each other and ask questions and read much more of the media information, like in financial information and financial education material that is out there.
Mariana Mamu. And that brings us to the end of this edition of The Bulletin with UBS, setting the agenda in the fast-moving world of finance each week here on Monocle Radio. You can listen again and explore more at monocle.com. You can also follow this show wherever you get your podcasts. And as ever, you can discover more and find out how UBS can help you at ubs.com. This is The Bulletin with UBS on Monocle Radio. I'm Tom Edwards. Thanks for listening.